A science story, huh?
Is NYU scientist the...
I felt, and I just thought, well...
I had figured it out.
It was that golden moment.
Because science was on my side.
Hey everyone, I'm Ben Lilly, and welcome to the Story Collider, where we bring you true stories of how science has affected people's lives. This week's story is from Andrew Revkin. The story was recorded in March 2013 at Union Hall in Brooklyn. The theme of the event was brain awareness.
So when I was a kid, I wanted to be a scientist, but then actually a marine biologist, and actually at one point briefly an MD, but then I learned later from my sister-in-law, much later, she teaches learning disabled kids, and she said, you're way too ADHD to get a PhD. You never were going to do that. So I became a journalist, and I ended up writing about all this stuff. But the one thing you learn is, well, one thing I learned as an ADHD journalist and now blogger, which is even worse, meaning I'm thinking, basically I'm thinking about everything all the time. And the one thing, though, I don't think about almost all the time is the thing I think with, my brain. And that's kind of why I like the idea of brain awareness day, week, month, year. But I had this moment a year and a half ago when my brain kind of forced me to think about it. And I'm going to tell you about this little experience, which is interesting. It was July. It was the first day of July, beautiful day, 4th of July weekend, Friday. And I was running with my son. This is my older son, who had recently spent time in the Israeli army. So he's a rugged young man. He was about 20 years old at that time. And I'm not a rugged middle-aged man. I was a 50-something person who was not even a lapsed exercise person. I just never really have exercised enthusiastically. So, but this was a moment for us to bond. We live in the Hudson Valley. There's a trail near my house. My house called the Chimney Trail. It goes up this wonderful wooded path to this open space on the top, and you can basically see forever. You see the Storm King Mountain and everything. And so we were going to run up this trail that I normally walk up. And again, I had this young 20-year-old. Personal trainer saying, come on, Dad, you can do it. And you don't want to disappoint, right? So we're going up through the woods, beautiful mottled kind of light, the light you get in deep woods, shafts of sunlight and stuff. And we're running and running. And I'm getting more and more winded, not surprised. And there's this real steep moment, a turn in the trail where I just had to stop. I said, Daniel, wait a minute, I got to catch my breath. And it's kind of like this. And he's like, no, come on, Dad. You know, and again, it's your son. I haven't seen him in a couple of years. So go, okay. And now I'm really feeling it, though. So I kind of finally say, Daniel, you know what? You're going to have to finish this on your own. You get to the top, come back down, and meet me, and we'll go down. So he did, and he got the beautiful view. And we're going down through the woods, and I start to realize something is really strange. And what's strange is that my left eye is insisting that the world is paisley. Paisley, like looking through a curtain, but only with one eye. And And I kind of sort of tried to blink it away, thinking, well, it's just the light in the forest, you know, it's kind of mottled. And so we're going down the trail, and I test this, you know, squinting, and it's still weird. And we get down to the car, we're out of the woods now, and I realize I'm a quarter blind. This one eye is half blind in kind of a patterned way. And I said, Daniel, I think something's really wrong here. Why don't you drive the car when we go back to the house? And my first reaction was to take a shower, try to cool down. Maybe it was just overheated. So I do that. And my second thought, and this was almost unconscious, I kind of was thinking, so, you know, I've been writing about science for decades, so I know stuff, a little bit of stuff, including about the brain. And I'm thinking, could this be a stroke? But most of my brain was saying, well, maybe not. But then as I was, I reached into the cabinet, I got my baby aspirin. I'm one of those 50-plus-year-old people who take a baby aspirin a day for the rest of your life, whatever, because the New England Journal of Medicine or whatever says it's good. But this time I took six. I took five or six baby aspirin. Well, you know, I knew that it's an anti-clotting thing. I knew maybe this was a strokey thing, and I thought, well, maybe I should take aspirin. And so I took a half dozen baby aspirin, which is maybe 80 times... a little more than maybe like two adult aspirin, not quite. And then I called my doctor's office. I should have done that in reverse order, maybe. But they said, you know, it was 4th of July weekend. They said, just you should go to the emergency room. This is weird. So I go to the emergency room. Triage time. I'm sure many of you have been through triage in an ER for something. I have a couple times. And so this time, though, it was like triage in super slow-mo. It's like those super slow-mo YouTube videos that my 14-year-old son likes to watch, where there's this guy. It's like jumping. They'll jump onto a giant water balloon that takes a minute to pop, because it's all in super slow-mo. Go on YouTube. It's really cool. But I thought my life was essentially super slow-mo at this point. It was like everything. They were doing their tests. They were putting me through this. They gave me a CAT scan. The CAT scan said I don't have a stroke, so I hadn't had a stroke, which is really cool. And but something was still wrong. The eye was still this. And the nurse gave me an eye test. I'm looking at the chart across the wall about like this. And I could see the letters, and she's going like this, and then I realized when I was using my left eye, I couldn't see her hand. So I can see the letters pretty badly, astigmatism, but I could not see the woman's hand pointing at the line of letters. I said, this is really weird. So they were about to discharge me, because remember, no stroke, my vital signs were okay. And they said, maybe it was just heat stroke. but then I said, well, I suggested another intervention. I said, my GP told me earlier, like 6 months earlier, that it was about time in your mid-50s to get your carotids to do carotid ultrasound of your carotid arteries. Because just to be sure, he's one of those very precautionary, over-testy doctors. So I mentioned this to the ER people, and they were like, well, I don't know. So then I said, well, call my eye doctor, because I had an ophthalmologist who was in, and he said, yeah, you should do it. So they said, all right. So this nurse gets out the little, ultrasound technician comes over, and she's doing the thing with the gel, like, just check for your baby, but they were doing it on my neck. And this is the second really weird thing that happens. So she's like this, looking at the screen. She calls over someone else, they're looking at the screen, and I'm realizing, she's saying, I can't find his carotid artery. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. And it turned out, And then they said, you have no flow in your left internal carotid artery. I'm like, oh, that's interesting. How could I be consciously actually talking to you sitting here and I've got no flow in my carotid artery? Because everything I learned in movies is, when they cut your neck or something, if you don't have flow in that blood flow there. But then part of my science writer brain was saying, that's right, there's collateral circulation, right? Blood can go like this, so you don't go unconscious if part of your body gets injured. So finally, though, they realized this was actually something going on. So they shipped me to another hospital. This is a Hudson Valley Hospital Center. I don't care. I'm going to say the name. And they're listed as a New York State Stroke Center. Okay. So, but there was nothing in my experience there that said that was a justified thing. So finally, my wife had caught up with me at this point, and so we had a little ambulance Prius parade from Hudson Valley Hospital Center to a big regional Westchester County Medical Center. And now finally they're getting a little bit more focused. I've got the tubes going in my arm, and now I'm admitted, and they do some more tests. But there's still, there's no stroke. They did their own CAT scan, more interventions, and then I had to spend a night in the hospital. Basically, they put me on heparin, which is like aspirin plus, but not quite Coumadin. That would come in a couple minutes. So I'm in the hospital, and this is my first experience in a neuro ward at a hospital, and it's just an experience like going to hell, or at least it's like, I don't know, maybe some of you maybe work in a neuro ward at a hospital, but it was like opening a very dark door, and again, a door that I luckily was able to skirt in the end, but there was the guy in the bed next to me alternated every 5 minutes between saying he had a fatal aneurysm and was going to die, and then saying he needed to call his agent because he had to get back to the set of Boardwalk Empire. he was an actor. He definitely, I tried later to remember. I never wrote down his name. I was going to look him up. I don't even know if he's alive or dead. I don't know which part of his story was more accurate, but all I knew was this was a disturbing thing, and I'm in a room with a guy who's either dying or not, or an actor. And then but then late that night, it was really the haunting part comes late at night in these wards, when there was some older woman down a hallway somewhere howling inconsolably through the night in a way that they just couldn't deal with, and I'm just feeling, oh my God, this is really bad. And then I finally fell asleep. And remember, I hadn't had a stroke, so that was the good part. But I woke up, and I had a stroke. Sometime that night, a clot that had formed in the carotid dissection that had happened in that artery had gone through, the various circulatory passages and gone to the place, the circulation that goes to the corona radiata, which is sort of a connecting part of the brain. And so I woke up that morning with like, whoa, this isn't working. That's interesting. And of course, I'm a writer, and in my spare moments, I'm a guitar player. So that was disturbing. And then I had various sundry other issues, but nothing, you know, it wasn't like I couldn't talk or couldn't walk, and I couldn't walk easily, but I'd had a stroke. And later, of course, then that meant I really had to spend time in the hospital. So I was there for about a week, because now I shifted to from heparin to Coumadin, which is rat poison-ish. Is it right? I think so. But they have to kind of stabilize your levels, and everyone is different, and you can't eat kale anymore and stuff like that. And so in the hospital, so remember, I think all the time, right? So I don't feel, I think, when something weird is happening. And so, of course, what do? I'm sitting there in the hospital. I start blogging. If you search for stroke and Revkin, you'll find my blog post, which is kind of a live blog of my stroke aftermath. Typed like this, as much as I could. And it included some very interesting things. You know, again, as I said, I don't think about the brain. I don't think about the thing I'm thinking with most of the time. I think about everything else. But now I was focused. And now I learned a lot of things about stroke that are really disturbing. I learned, of course, how many. It's like 800,000 strokes a year, 130,000 deaths a year. The biggest source of disability in this country. This is the technical stuff that I was learning and telling people in my on .earth, which is normally about sustaining the planet, but for that day, that blog became about sustaining myself, because you can't sustain the planet if you're not sustaining your own life and health. So I kind of dug through that stuff, and I wrote about telemedicine, which is that a really good neurologist could have been in that hospital or any other emergency room, including on an Indian reservation in Arizona, through this technology called telemedicine. There's actually a subset called telestroke. And I interviewed a guy soon after I was out of the hospital who is an expert in these systems. It's like a doctor can be on his iPad and diagnosing a stroke telling people to administer the clot-busting drug 1,000 miles away. Theoretically, it doesn't happen because of all these problems with our healthcare system, but this is not an educational forum, so I'm just going to return to my story. There's a lot to say there, let's put it that way. So I learned a lot about these issues. I learned a lot about my circulation, about carotid dissections, and which can come from yoga, painting ceilings, chiropractic manipulation of your neck, car accident, of course, anything that jars your neck in certain interesting ways. Oh, tipping your head back at the beauty parlor for that nice, comfortable shampoo can create this. What happens is the lining of your vessel comes clear and blocks the vessel just long enough for clots to form. So I learned about all that stuff, and I scared my wife, who's just got certified in yoga training. But it's important. It's important for yoga trainers to know this stuff and to be honest about it. And then I had vows. I vowed I was going to, you know, get more fit in a more controlled way than running with my Israeli army son up the hill. And I was going to actually, I thought, you know, now is the time. Finally in my life, I could relearn guitar the real way. I'd always played it in an ad hoc way. I've gotten pretty good, but I've never really done scales and stuff like that. So I started doing scales. And I thought, you know, I really was going to get my life in order. And then, of course, I just became me again. And one of the biggest lessons of my stroke was not those things, but that, I mean, to some extent, you are who you are. And getting comfortable with that is just part of, and then finding how to sustain that with, you know, in the face of risks of this kind is important. And then there's one last detail that's important to close with, which is aspirin. So I thought, you know, after this all happened, after this all played out, and I recuperated, and you know, I can play guitar again. You go on my blog, and you'll see the song I just wrote last fall, and so everything's kind of back in order. But I felt kind of smug because I remember I took those 6 aspirin, and everything I heard was that probably that did help make it a much less severe stroke than it might otherwise have been, and so I had that smugness that comes with knowing you did the right thing at the right time. And then, of course, when I was doing some of this post-game learning, I learned that about 15% of strokes are not from a clot, but are from hemorrhaging in the brain. And if you take aspirin, when you're bleeding, you die. So, in fact, just this weekend, I was at a restaurant with some people, and someone, her ex-husband, actually had that just happen. But in the end, so smugness is something to try to do away with when you're confronting these kinds of issues. And that's the story of my lucky stroke. Thank you.
That was Andrew Revkin. Andrew is the Senior Fellow for Environmental Understanding at Pace University's Academy for Applied Environmental Studies and writes the award-winning .earth blog for the op-ed side of the New York Times. He lives in the Hudson River Valley with his wife and two sons. In spare moments, he is a performing songwriter and plays in a twangy roots jam band, Breakneck Ridge. For more science stories, take a look at storycollider.org, where we have our archives of the podcast and upcoming events. We depend on you for our continued support. If you enjoy these podcasts, please consider donating at storycollider.org/donate. The Story Collider is produced by me, Brian Weck, Darren Barker, and Ari Daniel Shapiro. The podcast is produced by Rose Eveleth. Additional help from Brooke Williams, Lena Groger, and Justin D'Ambrosio. The theme music is by Ghost. Special thanks to Union Hall for hosting the show, and to Paisley for not always being scary. Thanks for listening.
With everything you have on your plate, earning your degree online seems impossible. But at Grand Canyon University, we specialize in helping you fit a master's degree in business into your busy day. Your graduation team, led by your own GCU counselor, provides you with the personal support you need to succeed. Achieve your goals with a plan and team behind you. Find your purpose at Grand Canyon University. Visit gcu.edu.